Challengers is brought to you by PAFCO Auto Diagnostic Center, the Boathouse, and by the Pepsi-Cola Bottling Company of Lexington. You've got a lot to live. Pepsi's got a lot to give. This is the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. On May 1st, the track is officially open, giving the drivers, mechanics, and car owners just 29 days in which to prepare themselves and their cars for the greatest spectacle in auto racing, the Memorial Day 500. Low streamlined racing cars costing from $20,000 to $100,000 must pass a safety and technical inspection and be given the okay before they can attempt to qualify. Most of these cars are built in the United States, but several have been designed and manufactured in Europe. Mario Andretti's car was made in Germany. Jack Brabham's car and two Bruce McLaren entries were made in England. Building a car this far away has its problems. Andretti's car arrived a week late, and Brabham's car, scheduled to arrive May 11th, was not available until after the first weekend of qualification because of construction problems and the trucker strike in New York. Brabham spent 48 straight hours putting the car together and getting it through the technical inspection. After a few slow shakedown laps, he was satisfied with the initial test. He qualified on the third day of time trials with a speed of 166.397 miles per hour. Top drivers from all phases of auto racing and from all over the world come here to compete for one of Indy's 33 coveted starting positions. We asked several drivers why they came to Indianapolis.
Just had the opportunity to come, and I thought I was proud because the cars were different. Indianapolis is a big thing.
Well, the competition is one thing, but of course the money they pay you rather nicely here. Real nice. The money proposition is very nice.
I suppose a little glory, like everybody else in racing, if there wasn't any people up there, we wouldn't really enjoy the race as much. We still run for the money, but you got to have people around to appreciate running, and that kind of makes a difference, I guess.
Well, this is the biggest race that we have, so money-wise and everything else, so this is the one we want to go for.
The Indianapolis 500 is the richest auto race in the world. Just qualifying for the 500 is worth almost $10,000, and the winner last year won more than $200,000. Many of the drivers who come to compete for this prize money also drive other forms of racing cars. We asked Charlie Glotzbach and Leroy Yarbrough, two of NASCAR's leading stock car drivers, about the difference between driving stock cars and Indy cars.
Well, in cars, everything happens a lot quicker, and quicker steering, quicker more acceleration. Stock cars, these cars weigh 1,500 pounds for a few hours, or 4,000 pounds, stock cars.
Well, probably without a doubt, the biggest thing is the size of the car and the weight to horsepower ratio you have. The Indianapolis car has about 650 horsepower, and it weighs about 1,300 pounds, so... The stock car has quite a bit slower steering and feels more like an automobile if you're used to driving every day.
Art Pollard and Jim Herdebees, two drivers who are more accustomed to driving the Indianapolis-type car, also explain the differences.
Well, with the Indianapolis-type of racing, you go so much faster, it takes just a little more finesse to handle the cars. They're lighter and, of course, more powerful. With the stock cars, you also have a birdcage built around you. You're in there pretty secure, not too much danger as far as getting hurt. as possibly there would be in an Indianapolis car. So I think that the main thing is that we are lighter. We're a little lighter in comparison to the amount of horsepower we have, definitely.
It's all competition in racing, and it takes a couple laps to get used to it. So if I don't really have to, because I've driven so much back guys, and when I lose, of course, I'm getting in the same mode track. So it's just a little heavier feeling on the track. I like that. They really fly. So of course, I just didn't run with the whip over my head, but...
At Indianapolis, there is no roof over the driver's head. This is open wheel, open cockpit competition. The cars are built within inches of touching the ground and are designed so that the top surface keeps the airflow on top of the body, increasing the turbulence and providing a downforce on the high-speed straightaways. The fins on the nose help to keep the front end from raising up, and the tail is designed to force the rear end down to provide more traction for the rear tire. The lightweight cars are made of aluminum and steel, and are capable of speeds in excess of 200 miles an hour. Even with good equipment, it's tough for a rookie at Indianapolis. A lot of drivers will race many kinds of cars for a number of years before they are offered a chance to drive at Indy. But when the big chance comes, it often becomes a rough ordeal, mixed with a certain amount of pride. A rookie's fear that he won't make it could prove to be the greatest barrier he must overcome. There were 16 rookies at the Speedway this year. Some did qualify and some did not. Out of the 16 rookies, only a few were lucky enough to land top flight cars. Four rookies made the race, and one of them will be Rookie of the Year. Sam Posey, an FIA Formula One driver, has been racing for about 5 years. Having never qualified for the 500, he is considered a rookie at Indianapolis. We asked him how the Indy time trials compared with those for road racing.
Whole new deal. And much more exciting here, too. You know, for one thing, the enormous crowd shows up, so you're really competing for something, you know. And for another, most all of the road races I'm in, there's no question of starting the race. You know, I mean, we're in if we show up. So the fact that, you know, we could easily not race here, in fact, the way I stand now, I probably won't, adds a tremendous aura of excitement to the time trials. I think it's a tremendous way to do it. There are a few inequities in the system. I mean, people don't all get to have a shot under the same circumstances, which is too bad. And a guy like Lloyd Ruby, you know, might have been able to sit on the pole if he, you know, could have qualified that first day, drew a number that didn't let him try the first day. So there are some problems, but by and large, very exciting system.
Posey had problems with his car this year and didn't make the field, but he'll be back next year. From the NASCAR ranks came Charlie Glotzbach and Donnie Allison. These two stock car drivers are more accustomed to the high-speed ovals than are some of the road racing or Grand Prix rookie drivers. On the NASCAR circuit, they race on tracks where the average qualifying speed is between 180 and 190 miles per hour. With the increasing speeds each year, danger is a constant companion. We asked veteran Art Pollard if he ever worried about the danger at Indianapolis.
About it. We're aware, of course, of the dangers. You know that you can take a calculated risk every time you get out there, but at the same time, you've been exposed to it over the years, and you more or less know how to do it. But you definitely have to have a respect for the speeds and the track and everything concerned. That's the main thing. You got to be aware.
Few drivers ever quit racing because of fear. Most of the leading drivers rely on their knowledge, skill, and experience to keep them on top year after year. The Indianapolis Speedway is fast, and it can be dangerous. A mechanical failure or a wrong decision could be disastrous. Does it take a special skill or technique to drive at Indianapolis?
The cornering here, you really
really have to have the chassis set up properly because there's very little aid from the bank. There's, in fact, 90 degrees banking doesn't really give you that much support as far as cornering stability. So you have to come up with proper chassis set up, and this requires quite a bit of fiddling around.
Well, certainly I would say that this racetrack is different. Whether it takes different skills or not, real questionable, but you have to drive the racetrack a little bit different than you do the high bank track. You enter the corners here rather high and then drip down rather low in the corners, and you have a tendency to want to do this, or I do, and I imagine most of the fellows here do. Instead of the bank kind of taking me, holding me going in, well, the car has a tendency to go freewheeling, so I'm saying it's a bit different than any other place that I race.
I think it takes more training. It's very difficult for a rookie to come here and make the race the first year. You have to have a lot of time on the track, and the more tire testing or the more time you can spend, then the faster you'll get.
How does the Speedway compare to other tracks? Does a driver have to be more alert at Indianapolis than he does elsewhere? Jim Herdebees and Mario Andretti had these comments.
No, I think I run a super speedway down south, Daytona, Talladega, and I run on. It's a little faster, you know, and and Ontario will be the same. We've got four corners, and it's more like a square track or down there as well. But it just takes a matter of a few laps to get used to one. And you're a race driver, you're supposed to know how to drive a race car. It's going to take more little practice.
Well, I think everywhere we go, we have to, as a driver, you have to make a certain study of the layout of the course, and there's certain peculiarities to every course, and you just go about it accordingly. Indianapolis is no different. I don't think I feel any more at home here than anywhere else. The only thing is, I think I've had some experience here that helps me sometimes in getting my car set up, but we never really have it made.
In the beginning, it appeared that Al Unser was the man to beat this year. On May 10th, he was clocked on the 2.5-mile oval at 170.973 miles per hour. On his second time out, some stopwatches recorded his second lap at 171.3. Unser and A.J. Foyt both had been flirting with the 170-plus mark all that week. May 16th looked like a repeat of last year. The opening ceremonies were delayed 2.5 hours because of early morning rain showers. The day was damp, windy, and cold. However, the 500 Queen and her court did bring some warmth to the 200,000 fans who came to see the battle for the pole position. A.J. Foyt, last year's pole sitter and three-time 500 winner, was the sixth driver to go out and attempt to qualify. His first lap of 171.103 was his fastest of the four qualifying laps, and his average speed for the 10 miles was 170.004 miles per hour, good for the outside on the front row. Al Unser was 20th in line to qualify. While he patiently waited his turn, he and car owner Parnelli Jones discussed their strategy. Unser then proceeded to go out and turn the first lap at 170-plus and the last lap at 169.972. His average was 170.221, putting him on the pole. The fans barely had time to catch their breath before veteran Johnny Rutherford came out and turned in the fastest lap of the day at 171.135. He then proceeded to squeeze into the front row between Unser and Foyt with an average speed of 170.213 miles per hour, only 1/8 of a mile per hour slower than Unser. Also qualifying on the first day was Mark Donahue in the blue number 66 Sunoco Special with an average speed of 168.911. Donahue finished seventh in the 1969 500 and was voted Rookie of the Year for his outstanding performance. Last year, he had the fourth fastest speed in the field and the fastest qualifying speed ever turned in by a rookie at Indianapolis. This year, he qualified fifth. Donahue is a versatile and consistent young driver and will be racing with the leaders in this year's 500. Dan Gurney, second place finisher in 1968 and 1969, is not only an excellent driver, but he has rapidly created a reputation for being a very fine car builder. 4 years ago, six of Gurney's Eagles made the starting lineup. In 1967, another half dozen Eagles were top contenders, with Gurney leading the way from the middle of the front row. Although the Eagle is in only its fifth year, it has truly made its mark at Indianapolis. In 1968, Bobby Unser drove an Eagle to a 500 victory, Gurney finished second, and Dennis Hume finished fourth in his Eagle. This year, Gurney has changed the design of the car and has replaced the stock Ford engine with a turbocharged Offenhauser. He says he is having to learn a new driving technique because of the difference in engines. This year, he qualified with an average speed of 166.860. When asked about the low speed, he said, "That's the best I could do today." He'll be starting from the middle of the fourth row. '69 USAC stock car champion Roger McCluskey was the only driver, except for the front row, to qualify over 169 miles per hour this year. He'll start his ninth 500 race from the inside of the second row. Three-year-old Art Pollard of Medford, Oregon, will be starting from the outside of the second row. Pollard may have the distinction of being the oldest driver to win the 500 Classic since its inauguration in 1911. Sam Hanks was 42 when he won in 1957. Pollard has been racing for 15 years and qualified for his first 500 in 1967. In 1968, he drove one of Granatelli's turbines and had worked his way from 14th to 6th place when a faulty fuel pump put him out of the race. He finished 13th. On the inside of the third row is 1968 500 winner Bobby Unser. This year, Bobby has been overshadowed by his younger brother Al, but nonetheless is still close enough to the front to give Al and the other drivers some strong competition. Bobby Unser took his driver's test in 1963 and was the fastest qualifier on the third day of trials. He started 16th, but spun out of the race on the third lap and finished last. In 1968, Unser set a new track record for piston-powered cars. He started on the outside of the first row and finished number one. That same year, he also won the National Driving Championship. Mario Andretti, the little Italian immigrant, had been having his problems this year, as he did last year. With only a few miles on the car, a universal joint let go, bouncing Andretti off the inner wall twice. Andretti was not hurt, but his car was badly damaged. However, the Granatelli crew went to work and had the car ready for the first day of qualifications. With less than 75 miles on the engine, Andretti qualified at an average speed of 168.209. That put him in the middle of the third row. Although farther back in the field, there are some drivers who are capable of running up front. Lloyd Ruby is one of these men. This will be Ruby's 11th consecutive 500. He has driven more miles in Indy competition than any other active driver except A.J. Foyt. He has led the field at some point in three races, and he holds the record for the fastest lap ever timed on race day. Ruby has a wealth of experience and a backlog of diversified racing, which gives him an edge over many of his competitors. This year, Ruby has good equipment, and yet the bad luck that has plagued him for all these years is still in evidence. He was unable to qualify during the first weekend of trials due to mechanical problems. In fact, he had 6 engine failures in a row this month. On the second weekend of qualifications, he turned in the afternoon's best speed of 168.895 miles per hour, good for the inside of the ninth row. With a little racing luck, Ruby could very well be the next 500 winner. Another veteran with lots of experience is Joe Leonard. Leonard will be Al Unser's teammate and will be driving a Johnny Lightning Special entered by Parnelli Jones of Torrance, California. In 1968, Leonard drove a turbine-powered Lotus, setting a new one-lap track record of 171.953 miles per hour and a new four-lap record of 171.559. He started in the number one position and was in the lead on the 191st lap when a broken fuel pump shaft put him out of the race. Gary Bettenhausen, oldest son of the late Tony Bettenhausen, will be starting his third 500 race this year. Bettenhausen has had some bad luck the last 2 years, finishing 24th and 26th. In 1968, he qualified 22nd and had moved up to 9th at the end of the 43rd lap when he ran over some debris, putting him out of the race. Last year, he started 9th and was running 4th at the end of 35 laps when a broken piston forced him out of that race. His performances in these two races prove that if his car will hold up for 500 miles, he will be a serious contender. NASCAR driver Donnie Allison will be driving one of A.J. Foyt's Coyotes. Allison started racing in 1958. He drove modified stock cars until 1967 when he began to run the Grand National Circuit. His outstanding NASCAR victories include the Carolina 500, the National 500, and the Southeastern 500. Being able to win a 500 race at speeds of over 160 miles per hour and having good equipment should make Allison a strong contender. On Memorial Day, 33 cars will line up to race. 33 drivers will be physically and mentally fit to go 500 miles in a little over 3 hours. There will be only one winner, and he will be the man with not only the fastest car, but a smooth-working pit crew, a great deal of driving skill, and most important, a large dose of luck. The Challengers has been brought to you by PAFCO Auto Diagnostic Center, the Boathouse, and by the Pepsi-Cola Bottling Company of Lexington. You've got a lot to live. Pepsi's got a lot to give.